Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's poppin', my niggas? PSA Podcast. You already know what it is, man. Fam, what's good? Yo. Nigga on? Yo. Hold on, man.
Yo, you hear me?
Hey, yo. Yeah, you good now. Yo,
yeah,
nah, you good. Nigga, your side ain't got to do over here, nigga. What's wrong, nigga?
I'm good.
All right, my nigga. Let's get right into this shit, man. You know, and it's a shame that we didn't get to talk about this the night of, because it would have been spicy to have this conversation, but let's have this conversation now. Nonetheless, you and I highlighted on PSA Podcast. You can check out me and Sean talking about Eminem's album or alleged album coming out, our thoughts on that first off. And we also had a conversation where I knew this would happen. Niggas would hear Eminem's freestyle and it was nice. And then start talking about his album is going to be crack. I want to say I love the message that Eminem put out there. Let me say that. But I think you and I know he was going to say something about Trump somewhere in the freestyle. I didn't know it was going to be the whole freestyle. What'd you think about M's freestyle on VT Cypher? Well, it's on the Cypher, he's stolen.
Well, first of all, I didn't know he was going to talk about Trump. That was you. That was all on you. You said that. I had zero idea. I really did not know he was going to dedicate the entire freestyle to Trump. I did not know that. You know what I'm saying? You said that, so I'm going to give you your props on that. You called it out. I didn't know he was going to do that. As of right now, the number one trending video on YouTube, it's Eminem's freestyle. It's Jesus. Eminem rips Donald Trump in BET Hip Hop Awards Freestyle Cypher. It is now up to 25 million views.
Okay.
That means it's impact. That means as of right now, it is still impacting. Personally, I thought it was the most powerful moment of hip hop in 2017. In this entire year, if you take a hip hop moment.
It's not a lot of powerful moments. So let's be clear though, the playing field is not a lot of dope moments in 2017. I mean, can we say that?
I'm telling you my reaction to the freestyle. It's the most powerful moment of 2017 to me in hip hop, and it resonated to me very strongly. I'm biased, and I'll tell you why I'm biased. I'm the same age as Eminem. Eminem comes from every era of hip-hop that I love so much. He comes from that era. You know, one of the things that's so funny about hip-hop is this year, you never knew what was going on in hip-hop because it never told you. You know, if you take the popular MCs of today, you would have no idea what was going on in the world or hip-hop or anything.
Well, hold on. There's a guy that, one of your favorite rappers that came on this show, and you bigged this man up numerous times, one of your favorite MCs, Crooked Eye. He had an album last year called Bad vs. Evil. No one talked about that when he was talking about racial injustice and stuff that's going on in the world. They swept that in the rug, and you told Crooked Eye yourself, you thought that project was fucking very slept on. So, I mean, let's not act like there's other artists not doing that.
I'm not acting like that. I'm talking about in 2017. You had Talib Kweli.
Just a year ago. It was 2016 that project dropped. A year ago. That's all I'm saying.
Right. But Trump wasn't president. Trump is president now. He's been president the entirety of this year. To me, this was the most powerful moment of hip hop. I love this moment so much.
But Sean, hold on a second. Just before you go. What about YG? YG had a song called "Fuck Donald Trump," and he got chastised for it.
First of all, he didn't get chastised for it. I did not chastise him. You did not chastise him. We wasn't upset that he said "fuck Donald Trump." It's always been "fuck Donald Trump." The problem with that was a lot of people did not think Donald Trump was going to win. And YG's correct. They did that mad early, and they jumped on it. And I saluted them and gave them mad props for doing it. But Donald Trump fucked around and won. And when he won, he became the most divisive, worst president of my young lifetime. Of my young lifetime. Okay? Now back to the Eminem freestyle. This Eminem freestyle was everything to me. It meant everything to me because not only was it the messenger, it's what the messenger decided to do. Eminem is the biggest artist of the last two decades, the last 20 years. There's no single who sold more records than him. Eminem plays
what
like
talking about selling albums or I mean just hopping on album sales, that's it? That makes you the best.
No, I'm saying he's the biggest motherfucking artist.
Hey, I'm just asking.
You kidding, my nigga?
Like, I'm asking. Are you just
significant of what he did? I'm trying to explain the significance of what he did. Eminem did something more significant in hip hop than any rapper this year, and it's not even close. That is why it is the most talked about. That is why it's the most trending. It was the best. People like Lord Jamal who didn't like it. People like Doggy Diamonds who didn't like it. They didn't like it for the wrong reason. They're not focusing
Hold on. Why do you think they did not like it, sir?
Because they're not Eminem fans. You know, they brought up – same with Ebro. They all brought up his past and stuff he raps about that they don't like. Oh, Eminem raps about killing his mother. Eminem raps about taking drugs. Eminem is corny. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about right now the freestyle. I don't say, yo, did you see the McGregor versus Mayweather fight? And just say, yo, why we like that fight? Mayweather beat up his ex-wife and went to jail. Do you see how ridiculous it sounds when you start critiquing shit you don't like about Eminem? That's how it sounds. That's how crazy it sounds. I'm telling you, for me specifically, it was the most important moment of hip-hop, the most powerful moment of hip-hop, and he used his white privilege. Eminem used, he knows. There are people that listen to me that don't fuck with rap. There are people that listen to me that do not listen to hip-hop. And it was made abundantly clear on social media when he did it. Hey, ESPN sports fan, there's a dude named Keith Olbermann. He used to be a sports – he used to have a sports center. He was up there talking about, this is the greatest writing I ever heard in my life. I flamed him. Everybody flamed him. Because what he did was show what – Eminem's white privilege actually did. Keith Olbermann said, I haven't listened to hip-hop in 27 years, but I guess I'm going to have to give it a chance now because of what Eminem did. Everybody flamed. I was like, yo, my dude. Hip-hop has had political messages.
Listen, I just want to say something, man. I like the message. You know, I'm not trying to be petty right now, but I got to say this. I didn't like the flow. I like the message. I like the bars. I could do it at the long pauses in between certain lines. I guess I don't know if he wanted us to digest it. That's why he paused. But I didn't like the flow and the pausing. That's the only thing I had a problem with. You know what I mean?
So here's the thing. This is what you and everybody else is missing. Eminem was talking to white America. He wasn't talking to black
people. Yo, we do know that. He been talking to white Americans.
No,
the Eminem show. We know. He's been talking about the fucking Eminem, white Americans,
no,
the Eminem show, nigga. What the fuck you mean? I don't know. How the hell I don't know that? We don't know that.
I'm talking to you and all you other niggas. Y'all don't know what the fuck you was doing. Because if y'all did, y'all
how the fuck don't we know that? So you know. So let me guess. You know that then. You know that, but we don't know that then, right?
You know how we don't know that.
Fuck out of here.
Obviously, you niggas don't know what you're doing. It's obvious. Because you know
it's not
Eminem
obvious.
Wanted to flow the entire flow. Eminem wanted to be very clear his targeted audience, who he was talking to, and make the
My nigga, he made it clear as day. He was talking to white America when he's talking to his fans. And he's like, I'm saying this to my fans right now. Here's the line. And all. We know the fuck he's talking about. What are you talking about right now?
And that's why he was pausing and stopping and rhyming like that. The little petty shit bickering about, this is why he did it, okay? He wasn't there to prove, yo, I'm going to be nicer than everybody. He wasn't in a cipher with Black Thought and Mos Def. He wasn't in that kind of cipher. He was by himself, a cappella. Okay? This is different. It resonated to me. He used his white privilege.
I'm not saying.
Wait a minute, Jordan Diamonds and Lord Jamar Ebro. He did not have to do this. Okay? He did not have to do this. And I'm going to be real. I know it really upset a lot of people. I'm going to be real. I know
God.
It really upset a lot of people about
what is
this.
What, where? Okay.
Because the most important moment in hip hop is by a white rapper. You can't put this on nobody else but him. Here's the facts. Let me not give my opinion. The number one trending video on YouTube is Eminem's freestyle, meaning it is still working, meaning the message is still getting out there, meaning white America, the man who did the song White America.
On Eminem's show, yeah.
Put, he basically said, the world is going crazy right now with this racist, incompetent, maniacal president. And I like to use hip hop. It was hip hop that made the that struck the loudest blow. Now, another thing people would say was, well, if Trump don't respond, then it really didn't hit his point. If it's Trump not responding, Trump don't
That's
have
bullshit.
To respond to this.
Exactly.
Here's
I don't know
Trump
that.
Trump does not respond to this because it was made clear. You know what Trump likes to respond? He likes to respond to black celebrities. He likes to respond. He likes to talk about Jemele Hill. He likes to talk about black NFL players. Trump knows, as a white man, Eminem is a white Elvis type of figure in white American pop culture. That's how he's seen. You think Trump
agree.
Doesn't know about this? Trump was on Twitter every day. Trump got Twitter fingers every day. Now, all of a sudden, he don't want it with M?
I don't agree if he doesn't respond to Eminem.
To
the point that you,
you
made, he doesn't have to respond for the message to be out there. I don't have to agree with that.
So anyway, let me just say, so anyway, my point about this is I love this. This meant everything
to
me. It meant everything to me. And you can't, I mean, the nigga told you, he told his white fans. Who? Eminem has more white fans than any black rapper. He has more white fans. He has more white fans than anybody. He told them.
Let's talk about the white fans then.
Fuck no.
Let's talk about the white fans then. How about the white fans that supported Trump might like Eminem, but because Eminem made those comments, he's standing on the front line for the Negroes. That's how they probably feel. That the ones I see some people on Twitter, white fans I'm talking about, say they don't fuck with Eminem anymore because of this. You say what?
And that's why Eminem is great. And that's what makes Eminem great. Because he said, yo, I don't give a fuck if I lose my white fans over this. I'm going to do this anyway. That's greatness. He wasn't calculating. He wasn't thinking about his brand and all this other bullshit niggas be talking about for everything. This motherfucker went up there knowing.
I think some people feel because guys like Dead Prez and guys of that nature have crooked eye. Guys have always talked about certain things. And I see some people saying, I seen Shotgun Shug say something about that. Other guys have done this and we ain't showing them love just because of Eminem. He's a white dude that we just acting all crazy and shit.
But some people do feel that way. We said the messenger. Remember we said if it's the messenger who's delivering the message? Eminem is not a regular rapper. He's transcended hip-hop. He's the biggest artist of the last two decades as a single artist. You know, nobody sells individually as much. Every time Eminem comes with an album, he outsells every rap album that comes out that calendar year. Every single time. There's not one
white privilege.
Eminem has dropped an album, and his album was not the number one selling album based on if anybody who sold a rap album. He's big. I mean, the man is so big, he doesn't have to tour. He doesn't have to tour.
No.
You know,
true.
Everybody's like, yo, I get my money off of tours. I get my money. He don't have to do none of
Eminem,
that.
Eminem, yeah, definitely. But let's be real. The white privilege does help him. The white privilege does help him.
That's what makes
him.
It helped
out tremendously.
I agree. And that's what makes it great because he used his white privilege. He used it. He used the white privilege where everybody's going to look at me. Everybody's going to talk to me. Now, what am I going to do at one of the most pivotal moments right now in 2017? We have Donald Trump wilding out. Donald Trump, a.k.a. the man who just now tried to throw a bomb in healthcare. He basically said the United States of America is not going to pay for healthcare premiums. That's sabotage. Do you understand that? He's actually he hates everything Obama did so much that he's now sabotaging the healthcare system, where now it's going to end up going into the courts and people are going to have to fight this to stop him. This is how maniacal Trump is. Trump is fighting to disband this Iran nuclear deal. This motherfucker is insane. You know what I'm saying? They asked Kendrick, why don't you talk about Trump? Kendrick said, because I feel he's doing something every day. It'll just be too much to talk about because he's always doing something. Okay, Kendrick, nice answer. That's what
I'm saying. Oh, wait, hold on. I sense sarcasm in your voice.
What do you say that about Kendrick, though?
Let me give you an example. Kendrick Lamar got Album of the Year at the BET Awards. That's why I use it. He got Album of the Year. And people asked him, why don't you – what do you mean, eh?
We'll get into that one topic.
He won Album of the Year. Damn. Should he have won it?
No.
No, I'm asking you. Should he have won it?
No, I don't think
he should
have won
the album.
No. Okay. No.
Okay.
No.
I think Kendrick should have
won
it.
And another scoop of no. And I like Kendrick.
Okay.
But I don't think he should have got it this year.
So Eminem did this freestyle. Eminem should have did this freestyle, and listen. Here's the thing: fuck a black person's opinion on this Eminem freestyle, because like we said, this wasn't target audience. So I don't give a fuck. What
I'm not gonna say fuck a black person. I'm not gonna say fuck a black person.
I don't care.
I'm not gonna say fuck a black person's opinion. That's a little bit of a stretch.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
We're saying fuck brothers' opinions now.
You know why? Because he ain't talking to us. That's why. So people he wanted talking about this are talking about it. That's why it led up on CNN. That's why Talib Kweli was on MSNBC with leading conservative people. Like, this is what happened when Eminem did that. Okay? It was a big fucking deal. All right? So black people in media who didn't like it, great. Mm-hmm. You didn't like it. So fucking what? Y'all weren't the intended audience. The intended audience was Eminem using his white privilege and putting it out there. Fuck all my fans. I want to be so clear. And let me tell you something. It was the most important, most powerful moment of hip-hop in 2017. And the reason why a lot of people in hip-hop media did not like it is because they felt, damn, such a powerful, strong moment was done by a white rapper and not who they
right,
would love.
I agree.
Who they think is the best rapper. That's what really hurts them, because it's a moment they
yes,
have
I,
to give to Eminem.
No,
they
that's
have
true.
To
that's
give
true, sir. I got to agree.
They right. have to give to Eminem. And wait a minute. One quick.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, Eminem is one of those MCs like Black Thought. They are spitters. This is what they do. They want to do it. You know what I'm saying? I salute him on that.
All right. That's what it is. All right, my nigga. URL TV Traffic 3. You and I, Ms. Cream, talked about this certain individual who I said, yo, man, you're having a West Coast card, Sean. You got to have this brother on here, man. I just like his vibes. I like the shit he talks about. I feel in a West Coast setting, if there's gangsters, thugs, drug dealers, pimps, prostitutes, and all that good shit in the building, that this guy's a good representation of that. And I say that in a good way, in a sense of when it comes to rhyming and the shit that he says. Now, he got pushed into this card against an individual by the name of Av, who's just coming off a battle with T-Top. Your thoughts, sir? Geechee Gotti versus Av, Traffic 3. This Traffic card, like you said numerous times, it's like a dope card, my nigga. This shit might be better than Summer Madness, low-key. I'm throwing it out there, too.
Geechee Gotti is building up his name. His name is bubbling. It's buzzing hard. I believe a fan-generated addition to the Traffic card. I really believe that in my heart, because it's one of the later battles added. And as people understood that this was going to be in the West Coast.
Real quick, I had to throw this out here, though. People were saying Geechee Gotti had some judicial system situations going on. don't know how true that word is, but that was being a word in the battle rap community streets.
Okay. What did that have to do with the booking? You're saying that maybe that was why we're hearing about it so late? Because they probably didn't know if he'd be available? Huh?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, sir.
Well, they got Geechee Gotti on there. Geechee Gotti reps West Coast hard body, streets feeling them. You are a big Geechee Gotti fan. You've made that very clear.
I would say, wait, hold on. I would say I'm a big, I mean, you threw three bigs in there. Right? When you say big, and then the last word is big, you put emphasis on the big Geechee Gotti fan. I like Geechee.
I like him a lot.
You believe Geechee Gotti gives you a real Compton street feel when you hear him, when you hear
his
battle ball.
Totally. Yes, I do.
That's highlighting. That's all I'm highlighting. And he's going against someone he's going against someone really like. You really have been a strong advocate for Av. You've been a strong advocate for Av.
Oh, there you go. Three strongs.
Yeah. So hold on. Three bigs for Geechee Gotti and three strongs for Av. Okay, sir.
Because these are two battle rap MCs that you really like. There's nothing wrong with that, saying that. You've advocated for these guys on your show. You've picked them to win battles. You've actually said they've won some important battles. So for these two guys to be together, I think this is, for you personally, based on what I know about you, you really love this battle. And
I like this battle. I do like this battle a lot.
That's why you said Low Key might be better than the Summer Jam card, because it's really given us some nice battles. You know what I'm saying?
But hold on. Am I off by saying that, though? That would it shock you if this is better than Summer Madness? Would it shock you?
Droc, Disaster, JC, T-Top. I mean, obviously, you're not going to have the big New York crowd of a URL. You know what I'm saying? And it's in the West. But
I think this card is going to have a big West Coast showing. I think all the top guns are there. You know, he's bringing out all the big guns from URL. All of the, you know, you got the street, the iconic Disaster. You got the new street dudes and Geechee Gotti. So I really like this battle. Av, what are you going to, Av, are you just going to out-rhyme someone who's going to give you some street talk?
You know, punches are serious, though. Don't say it like that, my nigga. Those punches are serious.
You're right. Punches are serious. You're going to show that you can rap. And then Geechee Gotti's going to talk some Compton G shit in L.A. That's going to be that.
But hold on. See, now you're talking the building. You're talking about in the building now. There's a thing called camera also that, okay, you can win in the building, but our camera's different. You should know that better than anybody else, being that you go to a lot of events. So let's just, you know, I'm not going to hop too much just because you're at the crib that you're going to win a battle. And I would say this about Geechee Gotti also. I had Geechee Gotti winning a debatable battle against Gleazy. I had Geechee Gotti get one round against Danny Myers. I gave it to Danny Myers. Stewie Nguyen battle, I gave that to you. So, and I see a lot of people, Sean, saying Av is going to do Geechee Gotti dirty. I don't agree with that.
Well, they're basing it on Av's rapid punches. How Av would just punch. And Av is very bar heavy. But what I'm saying is that I believe Geechee Gotti's street feel lyrics can diffuse lyricism. It's about style. Yeah, diffuse it. Let me try to break it down to you guys so you can understand. You can be more lyrical than a battle rapper and still lose the battle. Case in point, Danger Zone versus Goods. I thought Danger Zone had more lyrical and brought more punches to that battle with Goods. And I thought Goods easily beat him. With less lyricism, I thought Goods beat him. Goods had more street feel, more swag. Talk to him. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, that's right. Hey, that's right.
You can't. How can you hate swag talk when you talk about good?
I don't like swag talk.
The goods have swag.
I'm not going to answer if another nigga has swag. You want to do that, feel free. What swag? Let me ask you a question. When you niggas say the word swag, what the fuck do you mean by that? I'm just curious to know.
Presence. Confidence.
Because your fucking shirt matches your kicks and your hat.
I said presence, and I said confidence. That's what it means to me. It means presence, and it means confidence. It doesn't mean that you have Jordans on. It's presence and confidence. Confidence in your delivery, how you are delivering it. Okay? That's all I'm saying. So, Geechee Gotti is going to give you that street feel that you love. You love Geechee Gotti's street.
I love that shit.
If he does that, that can match back-to-back-to-back punches that you might have to catch on cam.
You
might have to catch that
on shit,
cam. This is going to talk about real shit to him.
I'm going to go Av 2-1. And the only reason because I'm going to Av 2-1, I'm going to go experience factor. I know because Geechee's at the crib, and I'm not going to jump out the window. I see people say Av is going to 30 him. I don't think it's going to be a 30. I think it's going to be a fucking good-ass battle. I really do. I know Av, you my man, but I had T-Top winning that 2-1. I got to keep it tall. He won that battle, in my opinion. So, but I'm going to go Av, man. I'm going to go Av 2-1. Cave Gang in the building. I fuck with that boy Geechee Gotti. Do not get it twisted, man. I really do.
I know you do. I know you do.
Like, if I had to, if it was up to me, Sean, because a lot of these niggas, man, I'm not going to say their names, man. I'm not going to do that on the show. A lot of you young niggas, I'm talking about the PG young cats, man. Some of you niggas, there's going to have to be a cut sometime where some of you niggas will make the roster. Geechee Gotti will make that roster. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. I'm pretty sure if you talk to Norbs, Smack, Chico, and these niggas, man, and people battle rap media, and Geechee Gotti's name is on a ballot, like guys that you could see transforming to the next level, getting to the next stage, or getting bigger names, and winning his battles also. I think Geechee Gotti would be on the top of the list. I love Twerk, like everybody else. I like Twerk a lot, but I fuck with Geechee just as much as I fuck with Twerk. I do. I know that's not the popular opinion, comment section, people. I'm not taking nothing away from Twerk. And yes, I know you're going to say, well, Twerk battle Mike P. Well, Twerk battle Cortez. Well, Twerk battle Ill Will. Yes, I understand. He's battled. The resumes don't match up. I give you that. But I like Geechee Gotti a lot, man. I got to throw that out there. I just do. Should be a good battle. Wouldn't surprise me if this is one of the most slept on battles on the card.
Okay.
I have more expectations for this than JC and T-Top.
All right. I don't.
One more sub.
No.
Of course. But of course you don't. JC's your man.
JC.
You like JC. That's your guy.
T-Top.
He's a weird matchup to me.
To quote Dre, you just gave T-Top the win over Av, right?
Yes, I did. Which I thought Av was going to be T-Top. I did say, I thought Av was going to clearly be T-Top, but I had T-Top winning that battle.
Yeah, T-Top. And who did you have winning between JC and Chef?
JC. And a battle that we have to recap to. Yeah, I had JC.
So,
3-0.
In your opinion, they're both coming off victories.
Yes. But
okay,
just because, so what you're saying, because they're both coming off victories,
yeah.
I'm talking about the style clash. The style clash.
So you got two guys. I want you to acknowledge that you have two guys who are coming off victories off of a big card.
I'm acknowledging that.
Okay. So to me, somebody's win streak ends. Right?
What the fuck does that have to do with me saying Geechee Gotti and Av would surprise me with a better battle than JC and T-Top?
I'm looking forward to this JC T-Top battle, mind you.
I'm looking forward to Geechee Gotti and Av.
Okay.
One more battle rap talk before we go to appreciation, man. All right, my nigga. Let's just talk about this, man. All right. We know the details already between Math Off and Sirius Jones. We already know what happened at Summer Madness. years ago when whatever, whatever. We know about that already. We're not even going to talk about that. Bam, all right. We know about the Miami situation. We heard about the Miami situation. Not going to harp on that too much either, right? What I'm harping on is this, Sean. And it's just, and I don't want nobody to think, nobody's advocating. We're just having a conversation because I feel strongly about this. And this is me, and I even told Sean about this days ago, how strong I felt about this. When we first heard Math Hoffa and Sirius Jones was going to be in the same building on the same card, the King of the Dot, I was shocked. I had to rub my eyes twice to make sure that I'm seeing the same niggas on the same card, right? Fast forward, I just had an interview with Math Hoffa a couple of days ago and asked him about the Sirius Jones situation. And, you know, Math, I don't want to say diffused it, Sean, but, you know, he made it sound like he doesn't really have a problem with Jones too tough, but Jones seems to maybe not to be too thrilled to be around Math like that. Like, Math is, and that's going to be expected if you're the one who got snuffed. You know what I'm saying? If the shoe's on the other foot, like how Math feels about disaster, wanting to get revenge, Sirius Jones probably feels the same way. Neither here nor there. So I look on Queen's Flip Station, and it's on YouTube page, and he has Sirius Jones on here. And Flip is asking him, you know, they rehashing the situations with Math Hoffa and Jones, the timetable, this, that, and the third. And I just felt listening to that, King of the Dot, is this a wise idea to have Math and Jones on the same card? Not wishing or hoping or any bullshit like that for anything to go down like that, but that has to be in the back of your mind. And then to hear Jones the way he sounds, Sean, like, he still has that anger built up inside of him. The animosity still built up inside of him, my nigga. What you think, man?
I think this is a rehash of something that happened in 2013. I think people keep asking both parties about this. I think they've made it clear. They've met. I don't know, man. People keep rehashing this. I don't know what people want to happen. So all I would say is that maybe the King of the Dot people and organic people should rethink when these guys have their battles just to make sure they're not in the same venue at the same time. That way you can diffuse any tension that potentially might happen. I know King of the Dot has two-day events. I would book for different days of the event.
Why would you do that? The first one of the cards is a big card with the big dogs, and the other card is Division II players, battle rappers, man.
The reason why I would do it is to make sure there's no situation. That's all. That's why I would do it. That way you make sure they're not in the building at the same time.
I disagree with that.
And then there's no and there's no get back. Listen, what do you mean you disagree with it? They're not in the building.
I disagree with that. I put them on a weak card. No. They have to be with my nigga. I don't want to, listen, putting them on a card with the other niggas, it just doesn't, I don't know. I don't like that. I don't think a guy of Math Hoffa.
Not them on the card. You don't put them in the building at the same time. If you feel that there is some strong tension, some lingering residual.
I don't know if it's tension. No, I'm just going off on Queen's Flip. Okay, good.
If you feel that way, then just, I would say, don't have them in the building at the same time. That's what I would say. That's how I would handle that situation. Therefore, there will be no confrontation. You can avoid it that way.
All right, my nigga. Just wanted to talk about that for 2 seconds, man. Appreciation, man. Ah. Going to Queens, man. Back on the day on the Boulevard of Linden. I say Tribe Called Quest, my nigga. You say what? R.I.P. Five Dog.
I say R.I.P. Five Dog. Fife Diggy. You know, a.k.a. the five-footer. When I think of Tribe Called Quest, I think of my senior year in high school, because that's when the album came out. Came out my senior year, and they were different.
Which album are you talking about, sir, for the people who don't know? Some people think Low End Theory is their first album. Just going to throw that out there again.
Nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks that.
Some people do think that.
Nobody thinks it's Tribe Called Quest's first album. Nobody thinks that.
Nobody can't
think that. Nobody
that's the album they always go to first.
Let me just say that. Nobody, if you talk Tropical Quest, nobody says Low End Theory is their first album. I've never heard that ever mentioned ever.
Well, that's
okay.
The first album they get love. That's the first time they get love. Major love.
That's not true. Jesus Christ.
That's the first album they get major love from, my nigga. What are you talking about?
On
Major Love?
The Blueprint, on the Blueprint album. On the Blueprint album. Jay-Z says Jay-Z on the song, yo, that Tribe Called Quest, can I kick it? Remember when he said that? Remember
yeah,
when he said that?
Because Jay-Z
okay,
is about
so yeah, that Tribe Called Quest, can I kick it?
That's Jay-Z you're talking about. Came up in that era, my nigga. That's all I'm saying. Now, the point I was making is Major Love. They got Major Love on Low End Theory. That's all I'm saying. Major Love compared to People, Instinctive Lies, Death Threats, and Taxes, whatever the first album was. I forgot that. So long. Yeah.
So, Tropical Quest was different. And I thoroughly enjoyed their first album, the album that you said too many people don't know about. I know about it. I remember the funny video, Left My Wild in El Segundo.
I never liked that
like
song.
Around, where they just walking around, and Q-Tip got that hat, and they just,
yeah.
You see these three dudes just walking around, Left My Wild in El Segundo, Left My Wild. Yo, that was just shit. Yo, so to you,
that was
man,
my
you
shit.
Didn't like to you, no. That wasn't the shit. To me, that was my shit. The niggas I fucked with, that was our shit. Because that was during the era where we was rocking these Paisley shirts. We was doing house music dancing. You know what I'm saying? We was.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You did house music dancing?
Absolutely. There was a period hip hop and house music merged.
Hold on. Were you rocking Z Cavaricci's in the steel top shoes?
Absolutely. I was rocking Jabot's, Cavaricci. I was rocking, Pat Levine, all of that. That was just the style back. If anybody wants to.
Yeah, I rock the style. I rock the style too. That's
anybody,
why I know about it, sir. Hello. But
okay.
I did not dance to house music. Okay.
Okay. I did. House music was part of hip hop during that era.
So you were listening to Snap?
Hip-hop.
I got the power. You danced to that? All right.
Of course. I danced.
Okay.
What do you mean? In that era, everybody danced. Niggas wasn't just standing against the wall. That was the era.
I know that, nigga.
Where Heavy D had his dances, Kane had it. Everybody danced. Like, what? You sound like that's not what was going on.
No, I'm just asking where you house music. That's different to hip hop.
Yeah.
See, now you're trying to be funny. You're trying to be funny by throwing it out there. There's a difference between dancing that Kane and Scoop and them type of niggas.
No. We was doing house music.
House music.
Okay, sidebar. There was a song by the Jungle Brothers called "Girl, I House You." Girl,
yes,
I House You. It was
a house song,
and it was an anthem. The streets loved it. The streets loved it. That was the jam. Everybody danced. It was playing on the radio all the time. That was the jam.
Did not like clubhouse music.
That
at all.
Was the jam. Hey, that's understandable. I can understand that because remember, you come from the rocker side of things. You know, that was his shit. That wasn't my shit. Okay, my shit was rock and other shit.
Did you say rockers?
Huh? Yeah, rockers.
Did you say rockers? What you know about rockers, nigga? For y'all niggas don't know what he's talking about. See, we can't say that, Sean, not tell the people what we're talking about. Explain to people what rockers is. They're like,
I'm not explaining. What I'm trying to say is this.
Yo, rockers are some reggae shit, y'all niggas. But yeah, man.
The point I'm trying to make is they came from the native tongue movement.
Yes.
And it was Jungle Brothers, it was Tribe Called Quest, it was De La Soul, and it was Queen Latifah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They used to rock dashikis, Afrocentric shit. You know, like, they looked like regular New Yorkers during that period. Cause that's exactly how I looked. I dressed like that, haircut like that, all that. That's, if you see any pictures of me during that era, that's how we dressed. Right? So, they, you know, I like that song, Left My Wallet, El Segundo. Yo, it was different. You know what I'm saying? It was just different. Then, so they had another single, because they released three singles from the album. They had another single called Pretty the Apple Bomb.
The remix was fire. I love the remix. Oh, my God.
It was a summer banger, because the beat was fire.
Yeah, the beat was fire.
Yo, and what made it unique was that Q-Tip just talked the whole song. He didn't really rhyme. He did like spoken word poetry, if you even call it that. He just talked. Hey, Benita.
He just talked. He didn't rhyme. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that beat was crazy. Mm-hmm. Everybody, like, that was the shit. Benita Applebaum, I got to put you on. Like, I remember everybody fucking with it, my nigga. Niggas was fucking
I love the remix,
song.
Though. I got to say, though, sidebar, I love the remix more than the original version. Okay,
the remix was fire, too. Because the song was so popular that he remixed it because niggas was like, yo, we want to hear you rap over this shit. That's how popular this shit was. You know what I'm saying? And it showed you how different Tribe Called Quest was and their approach to hip-hop, that they would come out with a song like that. Now, mind you, it's only Q-Tip you hear. Pfeiffer's on like one song, and that's the next song I'm going to talk about. Can I Kick It?
Classic.
Another song that niggas fucked with heavy. Like, this is niggas just really fucking with them. Fife Dawg said a powerful line. Mr. Dinkins, would you please be your mayor? Now, this is why that was a big fucking deal. And this is why when we talk about what's going on in hip hop, Giuliani was running against the first black mayor in the history of New York City. His name was David Dinkins. Here you got guys out of high school. A rap song that was very popular, and Fife is like, Mr. Dinkins, would you please be our mayor? And it was just, it was great because here we are, everybody knew what was going on. They knew there was a political race going on that had importance to black people, and he rapped about it. Like, this is what happens when you rap about your era you're in or what's going on. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Now, the song was fire. The beat was fire. Can I Kick It? Yes, you can.
Yes,
can I
can.
Kick it? It was fire. So that's why earlier I said to you when you said some people think Lower Third was different, I'm like, who thinks that? Like, we lived through their first album and fucked with it. Like, we really fucked with it. So
3.5 mics to me.
Me personally, I liked the album. I liked the album. It was Fife wasn't really rapping on it. It was Q-Tip holding it down. You know, he had a smooth flow. That's why he calls himself the abstract poetic. That's why he calls himself that. And, that was, now, let me just say this. I had no idea what to expect on the second album.
Oh, man.
I was not prepared. I personally was not prepared for their second album. Let's get into their second album.
The first single, Check the Rhyme, my nigga. When I think of Check the Rhyme, all I think about is Joan TV Raps, seeing them on top of the fucking cleaners and queens and shit, Bodega Store. That's all I remember, man. That time there, brother. Love Check the Rhyme, though. That shit is just, man.
So let me explain to you what I think about the Low End Theory. I think the Low End Theory is Tribe's greatest album. I think it's Tribe's greatest album by far. I think it's the first album that highlighted Fife Dawg as an MC. And I became a huge, huge Fife Dawg fan because of this album. It highlighted how ill Q-Tip was. It also highlighted the future of hip-hop and what was going on in hip-hop at the moment. You had Busta on the album. You had Brand Nubian on that album. In the video for Scenario, you had Leaders of the New School on that album. So you basically had what hip-hop looked like from a New York perspective on this album.
So are you saying that you rocked with Fife more than Q-Tip at that time?
I rocked with both of them.
Okay, just all right, making sure.
I rocked with both of them. There's nothing to make sure about.
Wait a minute. Let's not do that. Let's not act like in groups we always dice who is the.
No, we do. But
more, yes, we did, nigga.
Situation.
Yes, we did.
No, my nigga.
People love Q-Tip a little bit more than Fife in the beginning. Let's keep it tall.
Of course,
let's keep it tall.
Of course, Of course.
Run DMC. People fuck the Run. People fuck the Run.
Run
DMC.
This is
what it is.
So let me give you guys the history lesson so you can understand what Dre's not explaining correctly to you. On their first album, Q-Tip did all the rhyming. Fife rhymed on like one or two songs, so you didn't hear him rhyme. So of course,
I'm talking about going into the low end theory, sir. That's what I'm talking about, sir. I'm not talking about the first album. We're done with that.
Of course, going into low end theory, you think Q-Tip is better because you don't hear Fife rhyme. What makes the low end theory? The low end theory is Fife. The inclusion
and the production.
Of course, the production is great. Okay. Give your personal experience on it, and I'm gonna give mine. Okay.
Fife experience. I love the album. It's classic.
Fife inclusion on the low end theory infinitely makes the low end theory greater because he's rhyming on almost every song, and his rhymes are fire. Like you didn't know he was that nice. I became an instant Fife Dawg fan. He added so much flavor to it that. Come on. Now, here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Are you kidding
me? I am.
I love Fife.
I'm just saying that, let's not act like Q-Tip. People at that time was really riding with Q-Tip hard body. Like, this is facts.
Okay, so let me just say this. It wasn't riding. Nobody was riding against anybody. It wasn't like,
when I say,
yo, we don't like
this
of a nigga.
When I say riding, Q-Tip names always come up first. That's all I'm saying.
Because
I'm not saying he was lyrically better than Fife, but his smooth monotone and this and the third, he had an edge over Fife in a lot of people's eyes.
Fine. Whatever. Check the rhyme, their first single. The beat, boom. Check the rhyme, y'all. This is hip hop to me. This was jazz fusion. This was boom bap fused with jazz, and it had one of the biggest impacts ever. It's one of the most impactful albums in hip-hop history. It influenced the Black Eyed Peas and Will I Am. It influenced a group called Digga Planet that later came on. It influenced Slum Village. It influenced a group called Freestyle Fellowship. It influenced a lot of people who did jazz. Now, let me just shout out Gangstar, because they were doing it. They did it first, actually. You know,
well,
they came out
not with
the Gangstar,
Guru. Not
Guru.
The man was, you know. Yeah.
But this album is one of the most influential albums in hip hop history. It's one of the greatest albums of hip hop history. It's one of the greatest albums of the 90s. Now, I want to. So let's finish talking about the album. So, the first song, Excursion. Yo,
oh, man.
Yo. If as soon as the album comes on, it's doom 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 doom. Back in the days when I was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a pager, you can find the abstract listening to hip hop. That grabbed me instantly as Q-Tip a lyricist. I immediately fucked with it. You hear me right now rhyming that shit, right, Dre? Because that's how much that shit affected me. Like it goes to that, then it goes to Check the Rhyme. Like this is.
Yeah.
Classic. So, they second single, fine. We got the jazz. Yo, they second single, we got the jazz.
My nigga, how you match your first single like that? They matched their first single like it was nothing. Something that you niggas know nothing about.
We got the jazz. We got the jazz. Yo, this shit was so smooth. It was. Yo, so, okay, let's just talk about the album. Excursion. Love that song. Then it had a song
love
called
it.
Bugging Out. Bugging Out, Bugging
Out.
Out.
Bugging Out.
That was my shit.
Hold on. How about the video for Bugging Out leading into We Got the Jazz, though? I love that shit.
That was amazing. That was amazing. So I love Bugging Out. Another song that I really love was Verses from the Abstract, when it was just Q-Tip. Yo,
who had a better dolo, though? I think Fife had a better dolo, though. I'm going to keep it tall. I like Fife's dolo more than Q-Tip, though.
You like Butter better? Because Butter was Fife's Dolo.
Too.
Okay.
I, that's what I said. I like Fife's Dolo way more than Q-Tips.
Okay. All right. There's nothing wrong with that.
I know what you're trying to do.
I know what you're trying to do. You know. You think you slick.
I'm not trying to do anything.
Yeah. Let me tell you what Sean just did, y'all. Because I know this nigga. He asked me twice. Oh, you like that? You like Fife's Dolo more than Q-Tip? Because I said Q-Tip was the standout person to me and Tribe. He's kind of shocked. Oh, you said that three, but then now you're saying Fife had the best. Yes, nigga, I'm still saying that.
So I'm going to tell you something straight up because I'm looking at the track list now. I used to listen to this album from 1 to 14 back and forth, straight up. This is the tape deck era. And you have to fast forward if you wanted to get to another song. I mean, the CDs were out, but, you know, we were still buying tapes, and this is 1991 for crying out loud. So this was. I could just play side A, side B without no problem. Like, I'm looking, I'll fuck the verses from the abstract. I like Show Business with Diamond D, Lord Jamal, Said that X. Do you want to be
love Show Business?
No, that was my shit. Another song that I loved. Bob.
Yo, Diamond D killed that shit, though. I ain't gonna hold you.
Yes, Diamond D did kill it.
And Diamond D versus
what I loved about it. Diamond D dropped the classic album the following year, by the way. Of course,
Stunts, Blunt,
and Hip Hop. So crazy about this. This was a full year before Diamond D dropped Stunts, Blunt, and Hip Hop. So I'm
Word.
Just bugging that he was even on this album. Like, wow, y'all was fucking with Diamond D back then? You know what I'm saying? Like, these motherfuckers was really, they had the Hip Hop, what it was, Tribe had that. They had that. Vibes and stuff. I fucking love this song. I don't know what to say, but here I go, freak it. If the papes come, you know I'm going to keep it.
You know I'm going to take it.
Yeah, that shit was fire. Everybody know. I get more sense than you're sending your horse to party animal. I was. Yo, this song was so ill. Yo, Vibes and stuff? Yo.
Yeah, Vibes and stuff
like
was dope.
These two niggas were so different in the way they rhymed their voices, but it worked. That's the thing that was incredible. Like, it was a style clash, but my God, did it work. Of course, you know, Check the Rhyme. We got the jazz. There was a song called What? So what? And he just kept saying, What is a song?
That was all right. That was a fun song. It was a fun song.
But my point is, when you listen to the album all the time, it's like every song you end up liking because you like. Like, if there's like two or three songs that wasn't your favorite, you get through them because you know the song before it or the song after it you really, really like. So you would listen to it. And they have one of the great posse cuts in hip-hop history in Scenario. It's one of the all-time great songs. It's one of the all-time great posse songs. And you know, recently Crooked Eye did asked people. He said he was thinking about the song Affirmative Action off of Nas's It Was Written. And he said, Crooked Eye has been asking a lot of questions recently on his timeline.
Shout out to Crooked Eye, man.
And one of the questions he asked was, is Affirmative Action the GOAT posse cut?
No,
And the answer is resounding no. There's so many posse cuts better than that song. Scenario.
I think, hold on. Is it safe to say there might be goddamn 10 to 15 songs more better than posse cuts better than Affirmative Action?
I said we could get to 25. We could do a show on that. We could do a show on that and come up with 25, in my opinion. Easy 25, too.
We could do that. Facts.
Okay. Remember, we got 44 years of hip-hop to go with, man, so it's not going to be
good.
But now let's talk about Scenario. How big was Scenario, my nigga?
Scenario was fucking huge. I got to say it again, Sean. It takes me back to my high school era. It takes me back to Yo TV Raps. It takes me to Fife rocking the ill Georgia Tech hat. But I got to say, sidebar, I did like Scenario remix more than the original version, though. I got to keep it tall.
Okay, there's no problem with that. But the version that everybody's more familiar with, we're just talking about from this album, the Scenario. Okay, so let's get back to the regular Scenario. Here we go. How impactful was that to everybody who you knew that listened to rap?
That's very impactful because it's something that you highlighted a second ago. I mean, you just talked about Crooked Eyes saying affirmative action might be one of the best posse cuts. Is it safe to say, besides self-destruction and stuff, maybe some early stuff like that, that scenario is probably the first real posse cut that we really heard and gravitated to?
No, because we gravitated to Jungle Brothers, De La Soul.
Not over scenario, my nigga. You're bugging the fuck out. Not over scenario.
No. Listen to me right now. That was the song of 1990. That was the song of 1990. The song.
Still don't think it's in the same stratosphere as scenario.
Tip was on that, but yeah, it was equally as big, without question. That song was that song was one of the biggest.
Strongly disagree.
Okay, then you're
wrong.
That song ain't in the same fucking.
Nigga, that shit was in the same stratosphere scenario, my nigga. What the fuck is you talking about?
With De La Soul, Jungle Brothers, Queen Latifah, Moni Love, Q-Tip mobbed on that song. Everybody knows that song.
I'm not saying it's not on the same stratosphere scenario. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely it is.
Totally disagree with that.
We disagree with it, but I will get back to scenario. Put it this way. No, scenario wasn't the first posse cut we heard. Like you said before, we had.
I didn't say, my nigga, take this sugar daddy out your ear. I said that we gravitated to.
No, because we gravitated to the Native Tongue song. We gravitated to that song. You know what gravitate means?
Everybody. What's the biggest scenario, man? They did a fucking scenario remix, 2000 scenario remix. What are you talking about? Niggas did a remix of scenario. Come on, man.
Yo,
they ain't do no fucking remix of the JB shit.
So, fine, man. My point is, everybody gravitated to that song. Okay, that's all I'm saying. Now back to scenario. Scenario had a fire. First of all, the song was fire. Then they shot a fire video. Yo, I love
the video. The video was kind of crazy, though. I would say this, though. Dinko D, man, your verse was kind of whack, but that's neither here nor there, guys.
Okay, I liked everybody's verse.
Come on.
I liked everybody's verse. Now, sidebar, he brought up someone named Dinko D. Dinko D set off a song called Case of the PTA. With a fire verse. Like, I was a big fan of Dinko D. Like, let's not even act like niggas did not like Dinko D.
Big fan. My nigga, He was behind Busta. Yeah. He was behind Charlie Brown. Let's keep it tall. He's behind them niggas. What's the other nigga? What's the other nigga, the dark skin nigga with the dreads? The other nigga they had?
My nigga.
Milo and shit. Come on, my nigga. He was behind them niggas, man.
That's your take on it, and that's how you experience
the truth. That's hip hop truth. That's the hip hop truth.
Yo, hip hop truth.
My nigga, he was Dinko D was behind Busta Rhymes and Charlie Brown. True or false? Dinko D behind Busta Rhymes and this nigga fucking Charlie Brown.
I'm going to quote 50 to answer your question, homie. You ain't been through what I've been through. You not like me. And I'm not like you. I say that to say that my hip-hop experience and how I digested that era. Okay?
Hold on. Hey, 50. You're quoting 59. Now, let's stick to the script real quick. You got your joke off. I like that. That was flying. I ain't going to No. I want you to answer this question. I'm going to use your word in my Sean voice. I want you to acknowledge that this nigga was number three behind Busta Rhymes and Charlie Brown.
Nope.
Come on, son. You're fucking
not
going to
acknowledge it. I'm not going to acknowledge it because you live in the moment. We didn't know Busta Rhymes would become who he became. No one knew that.
Once you heard Busta Rhymes on Case of the PTA sob story, he stood the fuck out like a sore thumb. What are you talking about?
He stood out. So that's like saying, you know what that's like saying? That
what's next? Come on.
So, okay, fine. You made your point about how you – I'm not going to get into the – about who's this. I just want to talk about how great
the
scenario is.
Yeah, we're talking about Dingo D. You never get this much burn on a show, but go ahead.
And I'm just saying that the song, the scenario song was a great song. And words cannot describe the impact, my personal impact of the Lowen Theory. The Lowen Theory, just when we speak about this album, it's me when I went to Borough Manhattan Community College, BMCC. To people in New York, they know about that school. It's called BMCC, right? That's when that album came out. And I remember when they threw a party, man. My God, the guy, it was all about Tribe and Naughty by Nature. Like, Tribe and Naughty by Nature in the fall, winter of 1991.
Super facts.
That was my hip-hop. My hip-hop evolved around that. That's what it was to me.
Facts.
I mean, we still had the residual of Grand Nubians, because Grand Nubians' album, even though it came out late 90, it was played all throughout 91.
Public Enemy.
But,
he was bumping Public Enemy, too.
Right. Absolutely. But Lowen Theory had come out, and Naughty by Nature's album had come out around the same time. I'm telling you, man, this was all I was playing. I know it. I remember it. It was just these two albums back to back to back. And you can't – that's an impact that will never leave my soul. The impact of Lowen Theory as a hip-hop album is one of the great albums of my hip-hop life. Okay?
But, yo, when you fast forward now to Midnight Marauders, my nigga, crazy it is to match a third album now and niggas is having discussions – which Tribe album is better, Midnight Marauders or Lowen Theory? Just to have that conversation for them and for them to hear the hip-hop fans question who had a better album, they have to feel like going in after they drop their third album, no?
Amazing that they followed up their third album, their second album. They followed up. So let me tell you exactly what they did so people can understand this. It's equivalent to if after Raekwon dropped Cuban Links, he dropped Cuban Links again. Like, he followed up Cuban Links with another great Cuban Links album.
Great analogy.
Like,
great
that,
analogy.
That's what they did with Midnight Marauders. Classic groundbreaking album. And they just pushed the envelope. They pushed the envelope and kept it moving. See, to me, that zone, the zone Q-Tip and Fife was in, between 91, 92, and 93.
That was a zone for real, boy. That was a zone for real.
That zone was a zone that it was historic, man. I mean, we're talking some historic collaboration. They always knew Lost Professor. If people don't know, Lost Professor taught Q-Tip how to do this. Lost Professor is one of the most wonderful.
Lost Pro doesn't get enough props unless you're a hip hop nerd like us, man. I feel he doesn't get enough props to the masses.
Lost Professor is one of the most underappreciated producer MCs in hip-hop history, because his involvement and influence with everything we love about hip-hop. I mean, the man produced – people don't even realize this. He produced Coogee Rap's Wanted Dead or Alive album. He was behind the boards on Nas. He brought Nas to the masses. He was – he taught Q-Tip how to produce. Like, for some reason, he
Lost
never
Pro,
got
man.
The – he never got the financial reward I think he should have gotten. Like, the way we give Pete Rock and DJ Premier, they called him a boy genius. This dude was like 17, 18, and 19, man, producing
and
the greatest album we could
think of. And let me piggyback what you're saying, Sean, also about Large Bro. It's funny you said that. We give Pete Rock, Premier, Havoc, RZA, all these niggas they love, as we should. But if you ask them, they're a fan of Large Professor. But you ask them niggas that, they tell you they're all fans of Large Pro.
They will all tell you Large Professor told me to do it. Let's be clear. Large Professor had such an impact that, you know, at any point he could go to Nas and be like, yo, Nas, do something with me. And Nas will do it just on the strength of knowing this was the dude when I was growing up. Like, that's what I'm saying. That always counts. Like, that dude who was that dude that you looked up to that was your influence and inspiration in rap? You can never take that away from an MC, no matter how great they are. You can't take
that
away.
Facts.
On Stillmatic, Nas did a song with Lost Professor. He knows So let's get back to this Midnight Marauders album. I don't even want to get sidetracked because first of all,
No, I'm not trying to sidetrack you, but I'm glad the fact that we're giving Large Pro a little props because I think point you saying that, yo, he taught Q-Tip the boards, basically. You know what I'm saying? Q-Tip learned how to do One Love on the strength of Large Pro, shit like that, and I'm glad we highlighting that.
Large Pro was a major factor for the Illmatic album. Major. Like, Large Pro did everything he could to bring Nas to the scene. Like, no one can front on Large Professor. Nobody. You do not know who Nas is if it's not for Large Professor's Main Source album. It's that simple. By the way, that album came out the same year as Low End Theory. So,
yeah.
Midnight Marauders. So they first
Classic.
Was award tour.
Five mics.
Award tour was a huge, huge single for them.
Huge. That shit was
huge,
man.
Wasn't my favorite. It wasn't my favorite, but everybody loved it. Everybody loved the award
tour. To this day.
We on a war tour with Muhammad, man. Like, everybody.
Okay, so let's take it on. Let's take it here. Let's take it here. Check the rhyme on war tour. I'm going to check the rhyme. Where you going?
Check the rhyme easily, and it's not even a debate. There's
Word.
Nothing even to argue about. I don't think anybody would argue that. But by this time, by the time this album came out, because by the time Midnight Marauders came out, Tribe was officially, they were like
stamped.
The faces of hip-hop. They were completely stamped everywhere. MTV, everybody loved them. Everybody loved them. So their lead single just took – their lead single took off because it was off the strength. Like, we don't give a fuck what it is. It's Tribe at this point. That's how popular they were. So War Talk, very popular song. It was a good song. It wasn't my favorite, but it was real good. I will say
that
it was
drop
real
good. Hold on. I think what War Talk is, I loved it in the beginning – but it got so much burn, it was like, all right, my nigga. Then when I copped the tape, it was like, I wasn't playing it no more. I wasn't going to a war, so
that's
I fast-forwarded
right, right.
to other joints, you
that's
know what I mean?
Exactly what it was. It got played so much. I mean, it was overwhelming. But the album was, it was amazing, man. It was an amazing fucking album. Electric Relaxation. It's just...
Second single.
You know,
man.
And it was that second
Fire.
Single that was, I don't even know how to describe how good the song was.
You know, hold on. Their second single, in my opinion, Electric Relaxation, I burned that more than a war tour.
I think everybody would agree that Electric Relaxation was better than a war tour. Like, I think that's common.
We're not shitting on a war tour either. I don't want nobody thinking we're shit on a war tour. I don't want nobody thinking that, but we're giving y'all our hip-hop experience, so it is what it is.
They had a song called We Can Get Down.
Woo!
This shit.
We can get down. We can get down. I love that shit, my nigga.
I thought Fife
murdered
that
shit.
Yo.
Yeah, Q-Tip, he got you on that.
Yo, my nigga, I'm going to say this. By this point, Fife, to me,
I think he kind of overshadowed Q-Tip on Midnight Marauders, my nigga. I don't want to be that guy,
except,
but I'm going to be that guy.
Except he did not get him on Electric Relaxation.
No, he didn't get him on Electric. He got him on God
Dude.
Loves Stu, though. I love Spice's verse on God Loves Stu. Oh, my fucking God.
But he did not get him on Electric Relaxation.
No, he didn't
that's
get him on that. No, I'm going to give Q-Tip that.
That's the one song. Keep It Rolling, The Large Professor. I can't explain it. I love
Large Pro's
that.
Verse. I love Large Pro's verse, though.
Yeah,
I can't explain
why I love that.
More Large Pro
love. Yo, Large Pro verse was like.
I love that shit.
He ended it, right? He had the last verse, right?
That's on topic. Seems we're going to drop it. Queens represent by the album when I yo.
When I drop it.
Yo.
Yo, how he finished the joint? How he finished the joint and the beat just stopped after he said that was just so ill to me, my nigga.
And let me just say this. There was a song that they had released for a soundtrack called Hot Sex on a Platter. MTV went crazy.
Boomerang.
Song.
Boomerang, yep. Boomerang soundtrack.
This song, first of all, the Boomerang soundtrack went platinum. Boomerang was a big hit movie. And Hot
Word.
Sex on a Platter was a huge
that was
commercial
my shit. That was my
song.
Shit.
is Tribe Called Quest. So, I mean, Tribe Called Quest, at this point, man, they're like, they can do no wrong. At this point, Tribe Called Quest can do no wrong.
Now, going into the next album, I think they brought Consequence more into the fold. Not one of my favorite Tribe's album. What was it? What was it again called, Sean? You're better than me with names and shit. With the song with Faith Evans and all
Beats,
that. Damn, once again, was my shit though.
Beats, Rhymes, and Life.
Beats, Rhymes, and Life.
So here's what happened. This is what happened. So remember I said Tribe Called Quest was in that zone from like 91 and 93? They were like in that zone, right? Hip-hop did a drastic change. I mean, it's like hip-hop changed overnight.
What, sorry?
It changed overnight. No, I'm talking about from a New York standpoint, it changed overnight.
Yeah, because I'm New York
from
and the West Coast, I'm saying.
From a New York perspective, hip-hop changed so dramatically that by 96, think about this now, Midnight Marauders came out in 93. Beats, Rhymes, and Life didn't come out till 1996. Do you know what happened in 94? Do you know what happened in 94, 95, and 96? In those 3 years, everything changed in hip-hop. Everything changed so impactfully that when Tribe came out, it was like, oh, word, Tribe's coming out with a new album. Like, you got to understand something. That feeling for Tribe, you didn't have it like that anymore.
Was it because of the big layoff? And what you said also being that hip-hop changed?
It was because of the big layoff, but what happened during that big layoff? Look what we got. We got J-Ru. We got Wu. We got Buckshot Shorty. We got Black Moon.
Tupac.
We have Pac. We have Snoop. We have Mobb Deep. Now, here's the thing. Q-Tip was around during that.
Drink Away the Pain, You Don't Love. Yeah.
We had Big. Like, yo, my man, hip-hop changed so dramatically that by the time Tribe came out in 96, their sound, it didn't break through.
Onyx.
It did not break through to what was going on in hip hop, man. I mean, think about it. That album came out in 1996. 1996 is one of the greatest eras of albums ever.
What was the leading single again off that album?
It might have been Once Again. It might have been Once Again.
I did like Once Again though. I love that song.
This
overall album.
Yeah. See, this is when, but like I said, I'm going to just give you my experience with it. 1996, man, my mom was, I was fanatical Nas, I was fanatical Wu, I was fanatical Mom. Big. Like, and I was fanatical Mobb Deep. Like, this was the center of my hip-hop universe. I was fanatical Redman also. Remember, this is 1996. Right. Also, Reasonable Doubt dropped that year, too. And that album had big impact, you know, just from a New York perspective.
Right.
You know, it had two of the biggest singles ever. So, you know, Smooth the Hustle came out at that time. Lost
Flush
was very popular during that time.
GZA.
Lost Boys
was very playing
popular
a lot of shit.
Time. You know what I'm saying? So, the layoff and how much extremely super ill hip hop came out lessened the impact of Tribe Called Quest to me. So this album
was their sound dated, you think? Was it dated?
It just wasn't what I was listening to, man. I can't explain it. You gotta understand something. Think about this. We had already gone through Cuban Links by this time. We'd already gone through the Infamous.
I am, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like our minds, you know?
Yeah.
Like when I think, let me be 100 with all y'all. When I think Tribe, anytime I think Tribe, I think their first three albums. I go back to what we discussed. I don't go back.
I go album two, album three.
I don't go back to this album. And this is when basically, now that we found out, things started falling apart for them.
Yes, yes. And maybe, you know what, Sean? Maybe things started falling off going into that album, leading into that album. The continuity wasn't there. Like you said, the zone,
right.
You highlighted the zone earlier. The zone probably left by the time they went to do Beat Trauma and Life album. Now, what do you think about the breakup, though? Because, my nigga, I ain't going to hurt. Told you, man. That shit kind of hurt me, though, that Tribe broke up. Even though the Beat Trauma and Life album was there, which just to hear that Tribe broke up, nigga, that shit hurt my heart, though.
I didn't feel it that it didn't hurt me that much because I'm really telling you that layoff, man, it was just
wow
so much.
It hurt you at all? That Tribe broke up?
It didn't.
Wow.
It didn't because like we said that last album.
It bothered me. Like I just never thought that would happen. It bothered me. Maybe not hurt, but it bothered me a lot.
I mean something that. If you want to tell me a breakup that hurt me, it's when EPMD broke up. That really shattered my world because I just couldn't understand it. I mean, and when we do our EPMD appreciation, you'll really understand how I feel about them niggas and how they impacted me. But so that was a breakup that just like, what the fuck is going on here? I mean, the EPMD. Once that breaks up, you
save
can't
it for the appreciation, sir. Save it for the appreciation. You about to go in?
Talking about the breakup. So Tribe came out with another album in 1998 called The Love Movement.
They got back together.
Before you go to the Love Movement, though.
I apologize because. When did Breathe and Stop and All? When they started doing solo projects after Beat Trauma's on Life, and they got back for Love Movement, or was after?
That was after the Love Movement. That was after the Love.
Love Movement, another
so
album.
Movement, listen, I like
three and a half.
Find a Way. I like Find a Way, but okay. So here's the thing about the Love Movement. Now, let's just talk about the year. It came out 1998. Capital Punishment. It's
Ooh.
Dark and Hell is Hot.
Cannabis, Nature,
Black
CNN.
Thought, Black, Most Def and Tyler Pulley, a Black Star. Like, this all came out.
Heavy Hole, Nas.
It was just different, yeah, man. It was just...
The South was coming.
Like, because they impacted me, here's the thing, because
Outcast.
They impacted me so much of my early 90s hip-hop love, I always gave Tribe they love. I always gave them their respect.
Me too. I copped all the albums.
I listened to it, but it did not have the staying power. Like when I think 1998, I think Pun, I think It's Dark as Hell is Hot. You know what I'm saying? Like the albums that stood out. I think Hov's album. You know the albums.
Gangsta,
like,
Moment of Truth.
Woo! Moment of Truth, nigga.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Moment of Truth.
But he did our appreciation for Gangsta. But if you think about 1998. And the albums that came out, I mean, no disrespect to Tribe, but their album didn't match up. But it was because of my loyalty and how much they impacted me with their first three albums that I will always give them that look. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it was clear as day that this, you know, it just wasn't happening anymore. The hip hop had just changed. And we clearly know Q-Tip always felt, and he said it in the interview, he said it in the Vibe interview, matter of fact, I always felt I should have been where Redman, Method Man, and Jay-Z are at as solo artists. He always felt that. He had to feel some kind of way seeing Busta Rhymes leave Leaders of the
Nation. Does he have a point by him saying that?
I don't know because he didn't put it to the test. Because when you did put it to the test, I didn't like it. Like, Breathe and Stop.
I'm going to be real, my nigga.
That was it for me. Huh?
Q-Tip, I got to be real, my nigga. When you drop Breathe and Stop and all that, man, wait for it, man. I'm sorry, Q-Tip. I didn't like that.
Now, here's the thing. You went with the look. You know, you had the afro. You was really trying to do this mix between Prince and...
I did like the song Him and Janet Jackson, though. I did like the song Him and Janet Jackson. I did love that shit, though. I ain't gonna hold you.
No, I understand that, but I remember he was really, it really bothered him that he didn't, he wasn't looked at like you know, like he said, like Busta, Redman, Method Man, Jay-Z. Like he felt he should have had that solo. Like you know, when the best, quote unquote, the most popular person in the group goes solo, they post to really like. That's when they post to take.
You know
off.
What though? I can understand why Q-Tip felt that way because let's be real, man. Early '90s. Q-Tip might have been in my top five in the early. I used to really love Q-Tip, my nigga. That's why I
but
said.
But I think
I'm not trying to separate him and fight. But Q-Tip was my nigga, B. I'm not gonna hold you.
I can understand.
I could have heard.
Listen, I can.
Yeah.
No, I understand you because the thing is, Q-Tip saw early Nas, early everybody. He was there for all of that. Remember, he was so young. He was only 20. Like it wasn't like he was old. Like, when he did Breathe the Sound, he was, like, 28 years old, 29. So it wasn't like he was old at all. Remember, these niggas were doing this shit at 19 and 20 years old. So he, you know, I know he feels some kind of way about his solo career. He has to. You know, you're known for your greatest work is with Tribe, you know. Lionel Richie's greatest work is not with the Commodores. But he has great
what about
music with the Commodores.
But what about when Fife did Q-Tip though? And Fife solo project.
He went the hip hop route.
I'm not gonna fuck the hip hop that we like. And I remember him having his he had one single that had a video. I remember that shit. We was making fun of Q-Tip in the video and this that and the third. I bought Fife's solo album. Real talk. It's all right. I bought it.
At this point, you know, at this point, you know, it just wasn't the same. But see, let me not negate that impact they had though. That run, first of all, Beach Rhyme and Life, that album, because Tropical Quest had solidified themselves by this time, that album did well for them commercially. It wasn't, it did well for
of course.
Them. I'm just talking
my
to
nigga.
From a hip
my nigga, of course it did because they're coming off Midnight Marauders, the anticipation for the
yeah.
album. You're coming off Low in Theory, Midnight Marauders. Niggas like, all right, these niggas are 2 for 2, even though you like the first album. All right, whatever. But there's no doubt in niggas' mind that they're going to come with a three-peat. And that was in my mind, they were going to come with a three-peat.
And it didn't happen. And like I said, the landscape of hip-hop had changed, man. You got to understand, when the world changes around you, man, it's very difficult to maintain, which is why you have to give credit to Outkast, how they survived the different transformations of hip-hop. Like, when
right.
hip-hop would go through different phases, Outkast was able to stay true to who they was and just keep it moving, you know?
Right, facts. Right.
And even though, and you know, Outkast had more commercial success. Tribe Called Quest personally had a bigger impact on me personally than Outkast. But Outkast had more success than them. They just for whatever reason.
I could think that. You're from New York City, man. You know, by the time '96 Outkast came out in '96. By the
no,
time
they came
out, you can 94. Part of 94, right?
Yeah, but they also came out with a classic album in '96. The same year they came when Tribe Called Quest came out with Beach Rhyme and Life. Yeah, yeah,
right.
That album. See, so that's another thing.
I like Outkast, man.
That 3-year period where they took off, I mean, you got to understand what came out. That was big. So the Fugees comes out. Arrested Development comes out. Digital Planets comes out. Now, all these groups had...
Arrested Development? You said Arrested Development?
Yeah, Arrested Development. I'm talking about the groups that came out that... Arrested Development, the group that did Tennessee.
I never compared Arrested Development with Tribe. I'm just throwing it out there. I just never
No.
Tennessee.
No, but they were influenced. They were influenced by Tribe. They were influenced by Tribe.
They had a short stint, man. They had a short stint.
No, I know that, but their short stint was when Tribe, you know, hiatus Tribe. The point I'm trying to make, so many different jazz fusion acts that came out that actually had success. When I said Digable Planet's first album, you said, "Eh." I mean, that's so
disrespectful. Yeah, because it had like,
come on.
It had like 45 songs on there.
That's so disrespectful.
I'm reaching, but there's a lot of songs.
It's so disrespectful. Here's a hip hop thing. It beat Snoop Dogg for hip hop album of the year.
What you need to do is tell the public that you a big Digger with Planet fan. So for your experience,
I'm gonna give them.
You gotta throw.
I'm gonna give them.
Digger with Planet's first album is not a classic. It's not a classic. It's not a fucking classic.
Yes,
no, the
is.
Fuck
okay,
it's not.
I'm not gonna argue that. Let me tell you why I'm not gonna argue it.
Stand up for your man.
What I'm saying, that's like me arguing someone saying KRS is not a legend. KRS-One is a legend. Digger with Planet's first album is a hip hop.
No. That's a bad analogy. Okay. Wait a minute. Are you making an analogy that KRS was a legend compared to Digger with Planet's have a classic album? That is a terrible analogy. Terrible.
So the point is, It was the classic album. No question about it. I ain't never hear nobody say Digger with Planet's first album was a classic album.
Come around my peoples
between the ages of 46 years old.
We hang around the same fucking people.
Come around that.
Fuck are you talking about, man?
Come around my way.
Okay, Ellen Al Scratch. Come around your way. Okay, Ellen Al Scratch. Fuck out of here.
So,
Sidebar real quick. Joe Budden podcast. I know you. I just want to do a sidebar, Sean. My bad. I just cut through an Ellen Al Scratch reference out there. You niggas had the nerve to talk about Ellen Al Scratch, and the first song you niggas talked about was the song with Brian McKnight. What the hell was going on with y'all niggas, man? You know how the hell you ain't talk about if my homies calls compared to the Brian McKnight joint? He's there or there. I digress. My bad.
So the thing about Tribe is that Tribe, it fell apart by that time. Q-Tip wanted to be a solo star. He came out with that Breathe and Stop. It was, the Jimi Hendrix Prince look. And let me tell you something.
Yeah.
BET pushed it hard. Breathe. Stop. And I'm looking at it like, okay, but let me tell you something. By that time, Q-Tip was not in my – he was getting no play from me. No disrespect. But only time I listened to that is when I watched the video. That was not on my playlist.
Now, before we wrap it up here, the day your Fife passed away, man, what was your initial thoughts?
It was a very important era of my hip hop life was gone. It hurt me because Fife is my age, man. You know what I'm saying? These are dudes my age passing away. I can't imagine not being alive. I'm so young. So Fife being 45, man, it's like, yo, it's devastating. And then when I think of the era, like I keep telling you, man, those first three Tribe albums, man, I can tell you about my life, what I was doing, you know, leaving senior high school, going into college, you know, it was like the soundtrack of my life between the ages of 17 and 22 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had a big impact. This is what I listen to. I'm a hip-hop head. I'm a person who literally only listens to hip-hop music, basically. So if I listen to hip-hop every day, all day, Tribe, for a good 3 to 4 years, was in heavy rotation every single day.
Facts.
So, you know, Fife's death was a blow. It was devastating.
R.I.P. Fife Dog. Wow, this is a dope Tribe Called Quest. Appreciation, man. Please go check out our Concealed Smooth Appreciation, man. Sean, take us home, man.
PSA Podcast, Hip Hop Appreciation, Battle Rap, and Sports. Salute your Yankees. Salute CC Sebastian. Salute your Yankees.
Put some fucking respect on the fucking Yankees' names, man. Houston Astros are going to beat y'all ass. Aaron Judge, I'm going to need you to step it up, my nigga. I don't need you going 0-4 with 4 strikeouts. I need you to have a better series than you did, man. You know what I'm saying? But that's a test of the Yankees that as much as Aaron Judge gets love, as he should, other guys step onto the plate and do what they do. We're back on tomorrow. You know, some more appreciation. Who knows what happens tomorrow, next 24 hours, some shit we'll talk about. Y'all already know, man. PSA Podcast, me and the homie.
Yep.